The gold standard of learning is still the clinical trial, that kind of style of learning. But we should be able to get to a place where we can learn from the real world experience and the real world data of all the data we have in our EMR systems. And so data is really just an untapped gold mine, we feel, to move healthcare forward.
Welcome to the Business of AI in Healthcare podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Bob Kaiser. Our mission is to discuss practical insights and share knowledge on how to navigate the transformative technology of AI. It's important to understand how AI can be used safely and ethically while revolutionizing patient care, streamlining operations, and enhancing medical research. This episode of the Business of AI in Healthcare is special. It has been in the works for over 5 years. Yes, we're welcoming Don Woodlock, Head of Global Healthcare Solutions at InterSystems in Boston. InterSystems has a 40-year track record of turning data into value with speed and scalability. Welcome back, Don.
Great. I'm glad to be here. Nice to see you again, Bob.
Don, I tell everybody, I'm still in the shallow end of the AI pool. I really am. I'm trying to make progress and get into the deeper end, but I'm just delighted to have someone like you who actually swims in the deep end of the AI pool. I'm so glad to have you on. I want to set the pace here for our audience that 5 years ago this month, hard to believe, but 5 years ago this month, we had the opportunity to interview you on the Business of Healthcare podcast.
There you go.
That was a great time of year. It was December of 2019, and the episode was called Digital Transformation in Healthcare, What to Expect in 2020 and Beyond.
We got anything right?
You did. I'm going to highlight a couple of those things, okay, just for the benefit of our audience, and then we'll get into this episode and what we want to talk about. But back then, you were saying that everything is wonderful in our web-centric world, but it's not wonderful in the healthcare world. And you said the digital patient experience, it's not a uniform approach yet. And you expected that to change in the future. And with respect to the physicians on that front, you predicted that natural voice-based processes would be used to generate notes and create action items. It would be a big transformation in that area. And you also touched base on data, of course, and you said data needs to be more fluid. It needs to be easily shareable and flow to where it's needed. And that all this wearable data, generating data is an offshoot of real life, and that's good, useful form and needs to flow where it's needed. So you went on and on kind of to predicting what's going to be happening, the transition of care location, expanding to the home. And the one thing you did, I remember, you said AI, augmented intelligence. You get credit for coining that term, augmented intelligence. And you said these tools should enable everyone in healthcare, doctors, clerks, and that the ML, the machine learning, it depends on clean data. So I think you had a pretty good crystal ball.
Boy, that's very interesting. That's very interesting. I wouldn't have predicted I was that accurate. I was younger then and more immature.
5 years will do it to you, that's for sure.
Yes. Okay.
So anyhow, Don, today we want to discuss two important topics in general, okay? Data and education.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to start with education, if that's okay.
Sure.
Okay. I want everybody who listens to this podcast to go deep and find you out there, Code to Care, AI ML Revolution Unveiled. That is an incredible video series of education that you've put together. And you state on that topic that you have three major topics: education, use cases, and bias, ethics, and safety. So yes. Why did you choose those topics?
First of all, I really was motivated to do this series because I, too, was in the shallow end of AI not that long ago. And I think our whole industry is somewhere between the shallow and the deep. And we need to learn it more and more in order to deploy it well and safely for healthcare in our communities. So I have a interest in teaching. I really enjoy doing that. I've done it my whole life. And so I just got the bug and started to do these short videos on AI. And actually, when I started this Code to Care series, I did a little survey of my LinkedIn followers at the time and asked them what they were interested in. And it really was those three topics, generally speaking. One was, how does this work? What is a transformation model? What is machine learning? What's a large language model? And all those topics are confusing and they're not that complicated. So I just take the time to explain those a little bit more. The second, of course, is use cases, because ultimately that's what makes a difference in our healthcare organizations, is applying it to some use case and making a positive difference. So people wanted to hear what's working in some of their peers and how might I set it up, that kind of thing. So use cases is a very good topic. And maybe the underbelly or the skeptics are really want to make sure we're exploring safety and bias and ethics and regulation, and those kinds of topics are very important to making sure AI has only a positive impact. So I decided that as my third area. So I really try and push myself to rotate through those three topics with each next video, I would say.
I wish I could actually demonstrate some of these videos here on this podcast, because I got to tell you, you do such a great job of relating the data in a real world fashion. And I love the fact that you're writing on one of these special whiteboards,
yes,
which makes you look like ambidextrous. You can write backwards and everything. But that approach is such a warm and inviting way of learning. And so I'm going to talk about some of these different topics that you've gone over so you can add a little bit more color to it. But I'm just going to give an example of one that I thought was just incredibly good, okay? You have several out there on this topic called RAG, R-A-G. Yeah. And just the name RAG alone sounds intimidating, okay? But it stands for what?
It's Retrieval Augmented Generation.
Yeah.
And basically what it is, it's a technique to allow a large language model to be more accurate for your use case. It's almost just-in-time training. Let's say you wanted to build a chatbot to respond to patient questions, and you really wanted not like the general internet answers, but you wanted the answers to come from your website or your internal documents or your policies or something like that. Retrieval augmented generation is an approach where you basically retrieve some of your documents that are relevant to the patient question, and then you send those along with the patient question to the AI system, and then it can respond according to your instructions along with your content. So it's like a lot of AI things, it's not that complicated. We just bury it in acronyms and special terminology and jargon and that kind of thing. But that's what RAG really is. It's this approach of using your data with a large language model in order for this model to do a better job with your use case, your users, the answer space that you want the chatbot to respond to.
That's a great summary here, but I'm going to go a little bit further and describe to people what it was like to watch that video of you talking about this. I felt like I had an advisor standing next to me explaining something to me. And you said, look, here's how you start with this, okay? Now, you guys are familiar with prompts. You need to write prompts, and you needed some special prompts. And here's how we're going to develop these special prompts. And here's how we're going to get that data that you have particularly for yourself. And we're going to work it in to this prompt, and we're going to generate vectors with it, with numbers. You didn't lose anybody on that. You made that sound so simple and so easy to do. And it was just amazing to see how you stepped people through. I walked away from that going, I got it.
Well,
and then I said, there's two more videos out there that even go deeper.
I'm glad so. I guess it's a teaching technique that I use and a lot of people use to layer, tell the same story three times with kind of more complicated versions of it. And I once had a cookbook. It was called From Simple to Complex. And it would take the same recipe and do the simplest form. And then the next page would be one more step complicated. And the next page would be one more step complicated. And I've always used that in teaching. And that RAG video is an example, just a simple pass-through prompt. And then maybe a prompt where you provide the large language model some instructions, like how what your brand is all about, how you should address the user, that kind of thing. And then a third kind of pass through where you provide your content as well. So I've always enjoyed that teaching technique, and I'm glad it worked for you.
Well, that's not too different from the way they educate physicians. Do one, see one, teach one. Sitting on the topic there until you get more comfortable with it.
Yep.
So a lot of these topics that I look at, I have your website up right now with these topics on here. I'm just going to mention a couple more. We may go into another one a little bit more deeper here, but here's something fundamental. What are the different types of AI?
Sure.
How to use AI for patient portals?
Yes.
Risk of integrating Gen AI with patient data.
Yes. Yes. I mean, all good topics.
How to avoid bias in machine learning. Yep. If you're getting into AI and ML, these are some fundamental things that you need to know. Finding the right balance in machine learning thresholds. Oh, wow. How to train Gen AI in 3 steps. And then you go through the 3 steps like you talked about. Anyhow, yes. I just encourage people to go out there and make sure, I don't care how much experience you have. If you have a lot, you'll look at this and say, this is really good refresh. But Code to Care, AI ML Revolution Unveiled. So Don, besides teaching like that, you had a few other things that kind of go deeper. You brought up a topic. I want you to talk about this a little bit, if you would. Open source large language models versus proprietary models. And this leaderboard assessment. Tell us about that.
Yes. Basically, most people are familiar with one large language model, and that's ChatGPT and OpenAI. And I think they deserve a lot of credit for that familiarity. They really got the whole ball rolling in our industry around this architecture, this technology, and what it could do. But now we're seeing the industry grow up one notch. And that includes other companies like Meta and Google and Microsoft and Anthropic and others that are building models that are sometimes as good or nearly as good, but in the same field. But there's also this whole area of open source models. And these are either companies that are donating the models and making their revenue in some other way, or researchers or other folks contributing large language models in an open source way. And these models, they're not quite as good as the proprietary models, at least at the moment. And you mentioned the leaderboard. There's a good leaderboard that I use called Chatbot Arena. And you can go to this website, click on leaderboard, and you can see every day the order kind of changes, but you can see how people have ranked these different models. And the ranking they do is interesting. You ask a question, and it blindly chooses 2 models from the leaderboard, and then you vote on which model gave the better answer, and you don't know which models it's chosen. So it's got a nice approach, I think, in terms of ranking models. But you can see that the open source models perform pretty well in 10th place, 11th place, 12th place, that sort of thing. Now, what an open source model is, it's a model that you can actually download. You can actually run locally, either on your PC or Mac, if it's a smaller model or a small server or a relatively big server, but all within your firewall. And you can train these models if you wish, or just use them off the shelf. And this can work for certain use cases. There are certain customers that are not comfortable sending patient information out of their walls. And so having a model run within their walls allows them to be more comfortable leveraging Gen AI technology. In some cases, these proprietary models cost money. You pay by the token or some other mechanism. And in some cases, for your use cases, you don't need a model that good, or you can't afford that kind of money. So you can use a smaller model kind of in-house. And then also these open source models, since you can download them, then you can further train them on your own data. So it might be proprietary data or things like a real special data that will make the model perform well for your niche type of thing. So it's an interesting, I don't know, parallel space that's developing as well, that I think offers some use cases, offers some comfort level for certain organizations. We deal in about 80 countries with our products, and some of those countries do not have some of these model services available in their country yet for patient data. So it just offers some new options. So I don't know if that made sense, but that's the idea behind this open source model community. And I think this is going to play a role in our future.
I like the way that you took the time to review that chatbot arena. And I was overwhelmed. I saw 70 or more large language models out there.
Yeah, there are plenty. There are plenty. Yeah.
I have a question for you. How'd that happen? I remember when Roger Bannister broke the 4-minute mile. I know you're a runner. I know you're a runner. So
I am, yes.
In Boston, so you got to know about this. But once he broke the 4-minute mile, and within a short period of time, a number of other people did very quickly. Is that what's happened with Gen AI? Once OpenAI said it could be done, all these other people adding to it, how did they get caught up so fast? Do you have a thought on that?
I think it attracted smart people to see the possibility. AI is 50 years old, actually. So AI has been around, but it's really these breakthroughs that have made a difference. So there was an imaging breakthrough maybe 15 years ago around an architecture called convolutional neural nets, and a big competition where this CNN, this type of architecture, finally beat a human at identifying pictures, what was in pictures. And that was a sea change that attracted like a whole industry, including radiology AI, pathology AI, security, a number of fields said, wow, we can do imaging AI now. And it really piled on and built some nice companies and great products and all that good stuff. The same thing happened with language. The breakthrough was actually 5 years or so before OpenAI. There was a particular architecture called a transformer architecture, and that was invented 5 years before, but OpenAI just got out there and made it really work and made it public and captured the imagination of the world, frankly. And so that attracted all kinds of people, including myself, in a sense, researchers, academics, businesses, that sort of thing. You could say there's many more people working on it post OpenAI than before, or post ChatGPT than before. And I think that's where these models really come from. When you have so many people publishing so much, learning from each other, that kind of thing, it really accelerates the pace of innovation. And this whole open source community, frankly, inspires the private community to keep 10 yards ahead. If everybody's running fast, there's real competition. And that's what keeps the pace of innovation high.
That's an incredible story. You were probably one of the first when OpenAI came out 2 years ago. You probably had the beta alpha versions of it early on, right?
I remember using it on the fourth day. It came out November 30th, 2022, maybe something like that, was when ChatGPT released. And of course, I was one of a million people. So by this day seven, a million people had logged on, got an account, started using it. And I remember I was one of those people. So I wasn't like the first, but I was in the first week. And it was amazing. The whole journey, it's been a great couple years. One of the things that we talk about sometimes, given our company's been around for decades, is the different phases we've been through, from mainframe to microcomputer to the personal computer to the computer to the internet to the and Gen AI is, of course, one of these waves, I think. And this has to be the most exciting one. If you look at some of those waves, it's like computers that were big are now small. That's exciting. And cloud's kind of exciting. But the ones I would pick out, of course, the internet, that's been good for us. That's a lovely breakthrough for all of us. But Gen AI, I just think, is on par. I think it's just amazing. And we're just at the beginning of a really exciting time.
Yes. I saw an interview of Jeffrey Hinton, and he's the one that did neural networks early on. He just was awarded the Nobel Prize here this year.
Yes. Yes.
And he's been around this for a long time, 50 years ago. And they asked him, did you ever doubt that this would work? And he goes, I knew it would work. He just didn't have the computational ability to make all this stuff happen right away. So that's pretty interesting perspective. Let's shift a little bit here and talk about data, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure.
When I go to the website here and I go look at InterSystems, it says right up front, in big, bold letters, make your data AI ready.
Sure.
Make your data AI ready. That's a pretty strong statement right there. And you mentioned the word innovation several times. The last podcast we did was with Terry Jones, and he has a book called On Innovation. And he innovated the travel industry a couple times. He took a couple companies public, and he did pretty good with that. But innovation, it starts somewhere. And I've heard you say that innovation starts with healthy data. It's one of the most powerful tools in every healthcare organization arsenal. Expand on that for me.
Yeah, sure. We all want to take the best care of individual patients when they walk in the door. And we all want to basically move forward the practice and standards of care that we have. And both of those really rely on data. When you're seeing a patient, unless it's an acute episode where you can focus on their broken leg or something like that, health is a longitudinal equation with comorbidities and family history and a lot of points of connection and personal behavior. And there's just a lot of factors in what goes into a person's health and the right way to take care of them and for the patients to take care of themselves. And data is a very powerful enabler for the clinician to make the right choices about the patient and for the patient to appreciate and be motivated around their own self-care. And so interoperability has been a challenge in our industry for as long as digital records have been around. And one of the areas that we made a lot of progress on, and our company here, InterSystems, is really dedicated to improving. But what we really want to do is have any clinician have a complete, easy to access and understand and digest view of the patient that they're taking care of, regardless of where that information is stored. And that really enables the best care. Now, if you think about it from an aggregate point of view, is that some of our customers, let's say, they have tens of millions of patient records over 10 years, let's say. And so sitting in that database, basically our database, is a goldmine. What's in there is all the patient's problem, the treatments that have been applied, and how they're doing right now. You could say that the answers to healthcare about what works and doesn't work are sitting in that pile of data, really. And it's been hard for us to really extract that. The gold standard of learning is still the clinical trial, you know, that kind of style of learning. But we should be able to get to a place where we can learn from the real world experience and the real world data of all the data we have in our EMR systems. And so data is really just an untapped goldmine, we feel, to move healthcare forward, either individual health or just the practices that we all use to take care of our communities. So we're a big believer in that. And it also has a connection to AI, which I can get into in a second, but it's just a foundation. We're at the point where we've digitized healthcare, I would say. So it's not as paper-based or film-based or anything like that as it used to. So it's in digital form. But are we really putting it to use? Are we really getting the value out of that data yet? I think you'd certainly say no. And the next decade or so, I think we're going to make really good advances at really leveraging that data to provide a better healthcare system.
Data sounds complicated. You have data scientists that look at data. You look at the different formats that data come in, and you'd have to ask the question, people that are jumping on this AI bandwagon and they want to label what they're doing as AI, I think there's an awareness factor that you're trying to create about the quality of the data and how the data's collection. And is it transparent? Is it ethical? How do you guide people along that line? And what can you do to check against that? That's a complicated question to answer, I know.
I do think that people are underwhelming the data dependency of AI. We're looking at AI. It seems fantastic. ChatGPT can answer questions that I have. And isn't it great? Can't we just apply it to our systems. But the reality is AI systems are really fed on data. That's how they got smart. And that's how they stay smart. And that's how they get tuned to your organization. One of the analogies I use about data is it's having bad data is like having an out-of-tune guitar. In addition to being a runner, I'm a guitar player as well. And so if I would walk into a room and I'd see a guitar in the corner or anybody who plays guitar, the first thing you're going to do is pick it up and tune it.
Yeah.
Because there's nothing really you can do with an out-of-tune guitar and have it sound good. Even if you're an awesome guitar player, even if you're Eddie Van Halen, it doesn't matter. You have to have a tuned guitar, and then you can layer on top of that a great song or great technical ability or that kind of thing. You just can't go anywhere with something that's out of tune. And I feel like data is quite similar. If you want to build an AI system, if you want to build data predictive analytics or population understanding or do some research or that kind of thing, you can't expect good results if you base that on just, you know, any old data that you collect up from the attic. You really have to spend the time to bring it together, to normalize it, to curate it to some extent, to match patients across different patient IDs. This data layer doesn't come for free, and AI doesn't really come without investing in that data layer.
And the data has to be refreshed as well, right? You're continuously training your models.
Sure.
Old data doesn't help anymore. Data that's obsolete or that's inaccurate, that's polluted. When you go engage with a client and any healthcare organization and you look at their potential source of data, what kind of approach do you take and what kind of tools do you have where you can start that process of getting it organized? Is that a major undertaking?
I mean, it depends on the number of data sources that the customer has.
Okay.
So one of the things that's happened in our industry, which has helped, is people have into an enterprise EMR for the most part. So if you have 20 hospitals, you used to have 20 EMRs and you'd have a really complex situation. So I think over the last several years, people have consolidated on an Epic or a Cerner or outside the U.S. on our track care system or something like that. So I think that's great. And that is part of the problem. But you still have a lot of kind of niche little departmental systems, other databases, affiliated providers that have their own EMRs, that sort of thing. So if you have more than one data source, you get into the problem that you just said, which is how do I bring it together and have it use a common language? We start the process by understanding the customer's goals, of course. Like, why do you want to bring it together anyway? Is this a business-driven or a clinical-driven initiative? Or is it just the IT department wanting to clean up their technology stacks? Everything kind of starts with the objectives from the customer. From those objectives, you identify the data sources that matter. So in some cases, even though you might have 20 data sources, these three make all the difference. So we focus on where that data is coming from and then go through the process of how hard is it to bring it together. Matching patients is usually an early topic. Do all these databases use the same patient ID? And if the answer is no, we have a master patient index. Other companies do as well. We need to bring those patients together so the records aren't side by side. They're really unified under single patient. And then work our way through some of the key fields, simple things like demographics, like gender or race, ethnicity, zip code, city is usually okay. Standardizing some of those demographic fields that we have technologies to do that in the course of transforming that data. And then in the clinical data, it's applying terminology, SNOMED codes, things like that to try and get it into a standard form. It really depends on number of data sources and how wide the data of interest is to your business goal.
I'm going to point people back to some of these videos on that topic that you have. I think that's a safe place to look at is go back to the video sessions that you put in place. Wrapping things up here, Don, I want to get your insights a little bit on some of the regulations that exist or don't exist. I know that you're a global player, the US, Europe, different standards, I think, but what do you think needs to be done in terms of regulation? Is it too early to regulate? Should we be regulating sources of data as opposed to something else? What are your thoughts on regulation?
That's a good question, Bob, and it's tricky. I do think that we're in the early stages of using Gen AI, and I think that you could argue that too much regulation, it's early to regulate. It's early to overregulate, and we have a danger of doing that. My feeling is that we should target medical devices and the regulations associated with medical devices to just uplift them to AI standards. We already have medical device regulations around the world. We already have a process by that, regulators, standards, companies that know how to do it, all that good stuff. I think each of those products or many of those products will want to incorporate AI into those products. And I think the incorporation of AI should be aligned with the existing regulations. Maybe they have to be uplifted 10% or a little bit to make sure that issues like retraining in the field, validation, those kinds of things are taken into account some of the nuances of AI. So I think that's fair game because medical devices are important based on their intended use. It's important for us as patients to be treated with safe devices. AI has a couple nuances that need to be taken into account, and I'm in favor of that.
If we had another hour for this podcast, I would let you do a forecast for the next 5 years.
Yes.
But instead, I'm going to mark down on my calendar December 2029 and come back and visit you again 5 years later. And we'll have so much more to talk about.
Absolutely.
We might not even be real people then. We might even be avatars talking to each other. Maybe the NFL football games will be played with robots. Who knows?
That's right. I'll come and I'll bring my avatar. We'll both answer questions.
Okay. Don, it's been a pleasure having you here. This has just been a really great opportunity. I'm so glad that we're able to reconnect. Thank you, Don Woodlock, Head of Global Healthcare Solutions at Inner Systems. We appreciate you being with us today.
Great. Thank you, Bob. Nice to see you again.
Thanks for listening today. If you have any questions or want to hear from a specific guest, contact us at gopi.com. That's G-O-P-I, gopi.com. Be sure to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or your favorite podcasting app to make sure you don't miss any of our episodes.